Welcome to the Swiss Info Podcast, a roundup of the biggest stories from this week in Switzerland, plus the business and cultural highlights.
Hello and thanks for downloading Swiss Info's podcast for October the 10th. I'm Thomas Stevens.
Regulations like champagne, everybody likes it, but nobody wants to pay for it.
And it can also give you a blinding headache. Yes, another week, another step closer to global financial meltdown. On October the 8th, the Swiss National Bank joined forces with other central banks and slashed interest rates in a desperate bid to kickstart their ailing financial markets. The Swiss market index of the 20 leading companies reacted positively with a fleeting 1.5% increase, but it still ended the day down 5.5%. The decision to cut rates came 2 days after the Swiss Stock Exchange suffered its worst day since September the 11th, 2001, with banks and insurance companies among the hardest hit. Stuart Hamilton, Professor of Finance and Accounting at the IMD International Business School in Lausanne, told Matthew Allen that the joint interest rate cut was a sign of things to come.
There's a recognition this time round that there probably wasn't the last time round, that you cannot contain the contagion within national borders. Mm-hmm. Because so many of the banks, and it doesn't matter, I mean, Swiss banks operating in, you know, are operating in, mm-hmm. in the States, you've got you know, US banks all over, you've got British banks all over the place. What needs to be sorted out is who is the lead regulator in each case, because quite often there hasn't been sufficient clarity as to who is actually the top regulator and how much is delegated to at a local level, and what does the top regulator do to satisfy himself about the competence of the other regulators. So I think greater international cooperation has to be a real possibility.
He also stressed the need for better expertise in the regulatory framework.
Because the regulators themselves have been scaled back, cut down, they have become reactive rather than proactive. So by the time they have figured out what the hell is going on, it's too late. Whereas if they were a bit more proactive, looked at the strategy, looked at what the new instruments that were being created, started thinking what the possible implications for that might be, then we'd be a step ahead of where we are now. But that is predicated entirely on being able to hire people of the right caliber, the right experience, and that involves paying them and paying them well.
Hamilton nevertheless saw dangers in the short-termism of massive bonuses.
Trader in the bank, successful because he's taking really bad risks or big risks, but these ones work. He gets a huge bonus. That's distributed fairly quickly. Then he screws up, or then he's discovered to have been trading at an unauthorized level or whatever, and he gets fired. Now, there are many people out there that would happily trade losing their job for, you know, $3 million worth of bonus.
He also identified the risk of hiring people with impressive academic qualifications, but who lacked real-world experience.
One of our MBA students came to us. She got a first in pharmacology or something at either Oxford or Cambridge, I can't remember. Went to University College London as a research to do her master's degree in medical research. Decided after a year or so that non-clinical medical research was not going to satisfy her. So she joined the Bank of England graduate training scheme. And within 6 months, and with completely inadequate training, she was out on supervisory duties. The kid had nothing, no experience, no benchmarks. There's no room for that now. You know, we have got to get much more professional in our inspection system. We've got to be much more proactive. So it'll have to be paid for some way, but you know, and the problem is regulations like champagne. Everybody likes it, but nobody wants to pay for it. I don't have a specific answer. I just know that we can't go back to the situation that it was before.
Stuart Hamilton speaking to Matthew Allen. Christmas came early for Bernese shopaholics on October the 8th when the West Side Shopping and Leisure Centre on the outskirts of the Swiss capital opened its doors. The 500 million franc project boasts 55 shops, 10 restaurants and bars, a hotel, a multiplex cinema and a spa and leisure pool. However, the main reason for the great media fanfare was the centre's architect, Daniel Liebeskind. The son of Polish survivors of the Holocaust, Liebeskind has been called the world's most radical architect. He designed Berlin's Jewish Museum and is the master planner of the New World Trade Center. Liebeskind, who became an American citizen in 1965, told Swiss Info how this West Side story began with the Marx brothers.
It was a drawing. It was an image that I had in my mind from the Marx brothers film, The Big Store. and I drew a kind of nexus, a kind of connection of different things, of Bern, of this site, and of a kind of something of an adventure in shopping.
West Side's wood cladding is intended to harmonise with the surrounding countryside, but in typical Liebeskind style, the inclines and jagged edges of the buildings are urban modern, not chocolate box Swiss. West Side is an 8-minute drive from the city centre and spans the A1 motorway like a petrol station, which Liebeskind saw as an added challenge.
I wanted to take this idea of irrelevant buildings on the highways, you know, these metallic boxes thrown around, and say this is not the right way. The right way is to create, use the highway in a positive sense, make something positive out of this this conglomerate, you know, of sprawl. Bring it together, condense it, create an attraction and a destination where people will not just come and go and leave, but really stay and do something and contribute not just to the economy, but to the social life.
Liebeskind has realized some important buildings in his career, but this is his first shopping center.
I think it's a cathedral not for money, but for people. You know, money has always been part of the medieval world as well. You know, those cathedrals cost a lot of money to build. So we can't make that kind of separation between the spirit and the material world. But I think this place will provide a spirit of something that touches your emotion, it touches your guts. It's not just for the mind and not just for calculation.
Daniel Liebeskind talking about the West Side Shopping Centre. And now a look at this week's lighter news. American comedian Jerry Seinfeld once observed it was pretty impressive the Swiss Army hadn't been in a war for 500 years. It was also pretty lucky, he said, since the Swiss Army knife's corkscrews, spoons and toe clippers could only protect the country so much. On October the 6th, the Swiss Defence Ministry announced that following 8 incidents in which shots were somehow fired accidentally by members of Switzerland's highly trained non-professional army, soldiers on guard duty would no longer be entrusted with loaded weapons. Instead, they would be given pepper spray and those guns which let out a bang flag when the trigger is pulled. All right, the second bit's not entirely true, but they will have the pepper spray. Guards will still carry loaded guns, the ministry said, but no shots can be fired before the ammunition is put in position. Elsewhere, on October the 9th, the first no-star hotel in the world opened in St. Gallen. Details, as indeed frills, were scarce, but the project organisers, twins Frank and Patrick Ricklin, said that for between 10 and 15 francs, you too could spend the night in a former military bunker. Now we cast our eyes a bit further afield. This week, Urs Geiser speaks to Andy Egli, a coach and former Swiss national football player who has just returned from North Korea. Egli was the first instructor to be asked by FIFA, Football World's governing body, to spend 2 months training coaches and players in the communist state. Egli explains how he ended up in Pyongyang.
7 years ago, I went to Germany to coach football teams, and I was always focused on what happens in the world, not just in our small country, Switzerland. So when the day came that I was approached by a very good friend at FIFA, who asked me if I could imagine to coach a South Korean team, I immediately accepted. And when I was in South Korea, one day I decided to go up to the border, and I just could see over the fence the country and people, military police people standing at the fence and of course not allowing me to cross the border. And at that time, I said to myself, if one day I could go to North Korea, that would be a great thing.
What does FIFA want to do when they send experts like you abroad?
Well, for FIFA, it is a must to develop countries like North Korea, but a lot of others also in the South Pacific area, in Africa, in Oceania. All the money that FIFA can earn by the above all by the World Cup, they want to reinvest in order to develop the football in those countries who have not the opportunity to have good coaches, who do not have the finances to create structures, who do not even have reasonable pitches.
What's the most striking difference when you watch a match in North Korea? What's the level compared to Europe?
The endurance, the speed, the explosivity, the determination, the will of the South Koreans to develop, to learn quickly. This is very, very impressive. And the lacks they do have is certainly decision-taking when tactics are in question. Mm-hmm. I mean by that, they have problems to take the good decisions, mm-hmm. because they are used to follow advices always from someone, a leader or a boss. In a football game, in a fraction of a second, you have to take a decision. And for Koreans, it might be very, very difficult because they are not used to it mentally.
What do people in North Korea know about the West or Western football? Do they know names? Do they know our stars? Do they know Beckham? Have they heard of Beckham?
This was a nice experience. I made a lecture about stars. After 5 or 10 minutes, I became aware how I can talk to these people about dealing with stars when they do not know what is a star. And I just explained them, a star in our culture is someone who is doing very well something he likes to do. So, for instance, playing football, and who appears a lot in the media because he's doing very well what he likes. And they started to understand. And when I mentioned some names, I said to them, do you ever heard of Ronaldo? Because Brazil was world champion in South Korea and Japan. Mm-hmm. And some guys, yeah, Brazilian. Others didn't know anything. Yeah. And I asked them other question, do you know in other parts of the life stars, in politics or economy? And someone said, Rockefeller. It was quite amazing. Concerning information, they do not know anything what happens around their country.
Any advice for somebody who might also want to go and work as a teacher, football teacher abroad?
First thing is being very open-minded. Nobody should expect that something is similar to our countries, to Western countries where we live. It is the total opposite. So when people are ready for that and considering it as a challenge, also as a human being, not just concerning the work, the daily work, but the challenge to meet other people, other system, well, if someone is ready for that, people should do it.
Andy Egli speaking to Urs Geiser. Thanks for listening. Learn more about these stories at swissinfo.ch. Turn on, tune in, and download again next week for some more Swiss news and views. I'm Thomas Stevens.